Basketball Manitoba podcast, we have Reid Kenyon. He has been officiating for over 30 years and is one of four Manitobans who has held a FIBA international card. He's officiated over 14 U Sport national championships and numerous international competitions around the world, even officiating the Dream Team in Madison Square Garden. He is the head assigner for the Winnipeg Minor Basketball Association, a role which he's held since the league's inception. He is president of the Manitoba Association of Basketball Officials, and he's been awarded Manitoba Official of the Year for outstanding officiating achievements in 2015. Reid, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Darcy. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. So I was kind of mentioning a little earlier before we went live that you are one of the, you know, I use the word pure official, and that was just because I think we've had people who officiated, like Ross Wedleg was our first official, right? But Ross is, you know, maybe known for other things. You know, we had Rick DeGagne, who's a longtime official, but, you know, I was asking Rick a lot about like coaching and stuff and everything like that. But as far as I know, you're kind of like you're an official first, and then, you know, you have other things in your life. But you and I go way back, because I used to work in the 100%. WNBA, but yeah. Even before that, because I know for a fact that in high school you refereed me, in college you officiated me. When I was a coach myself, in college you officiated me. And then after that, we worked together with WNBA. So to say there's a lot of touch points there would be an understatement, but it's an honor to have you on, man.
Yeah, likewise. Appreciate the time. It must have been a slow day that nobody else answered the phone. And I'm like, Darcy wants me to have on his podcast here. So
I'll be here. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I'll just make it known, because people always ask me, since you bring it up, Adam is the decision maker on this. So if you have any complaints about the guest list or anything like that, send it to Adam. I just ask the questions.
Okay, good. I'll note that.
So maybe Adam owes you something. I don't know. He's like, we got to get Reid on. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe you've been emailing him and saying, are we going to get more officials on this thing or what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We actually talked about that.
That's funny. No, well, I mean, I'd mentioned kind of at the start. I mean, there have been other officials. Like, again, Ross was episode one, and we had Rick DeGagne and other people I know have officiated that are coaches as well. But that's kind of the way things are in Manitoba and just basketball generally. Like, if you're like coaching or if you're doing like community club or you do other things, like, there's a lot of people who play and they also officiate as well. Like, it's not just like people are. I'm just an official. You do have some like that, but you also have people who are players, coaches as well. It's pretty cool.
It is. It's the community is so small, to be honest, you know, like everywhere I go, you know, if it's refereeing a university game or a high school game or, you know, just being around the WNBA, the paths you cross. Mm-hmm. It could be a player, the referee in a senior men's game that's also a coach in high school or, you know, last night I was at the university and I must have ran into four or five different people from different walks of the basketball community. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you know, it's one of the great things about our community is it's so, you know, it's probably the biggest, smallest kind of a sports organization or a province or sport in a province there is. So, yeah, it's great to see, you know, just different walks of life and people being a sport, bringing us together. And, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, certainly with the fact that, you know, as you, my intro, I mean, I have lots of different touch points, as you say, being on the executive with Maple and the WNBA and I'm still running around trying to referee. And you're making me feel old, Darcy, when you start throwing out those names or numbers. Refereed for over 30 years, and it's
yeah. Well, I was joking before. I was like, man, I was like, how old are you? Because I we were going over the bio, and then I was like, wait, well, how old are you then? And you're in your 50s, and so, you know, hey, that's time flies, as they say. But lots of stuff has happened, and we're gonna kind of get into that. Quick question though. So you said you're still officiating. Are you still doing U Sport stuff?
100%. Yeah. Still running around there. It's I think it's my 31st year doing U Sport or Canada West or whatever it's been called over the years. Yeah. So you know, so it's an interesting. You mentioned Rick DeGagne, and certainly one of my mentors and guys I looked up to over those years. He recently did his 1,000th game at the U Sport level, and I started adding up my games, and geez, I'm about to hit that milestone myself.
Really?
Yeah. So it's Very interesting. I never really thought about it, but 30 years times 30, 35 games a year, the number it gets there pretty quick.
Absolutely. It's funny you mentioned that, like, whatever they're calling it these days. I mean, you must have seen, because even I, like, I mean, I even remember it was like CIU, CIS, now U Sports. So there's been three changes in my time. Pretty crazy.
It's just and it's great to see, because you see different teams now. We got a program now that we're part of in U Sport with 14 or 15 schools now all across Western Canada. So, when I broke in, it was the GPAC league, where you basically had four schools, and you're primarily from Manitoba here. You're playing Brandon and Winnipeg, Manitoba, and then of course Regina was a part of that as well. So, seeing the same teams that many times probably isn't that exciting for the players and the teams. And now we have different programs coming through all the time. We had the University of Alberta's here in Winnipeg this weekend playing the Westmans. So yeah, a lot of change over the years, and it's and good change.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, I'm excited to hear about the tournament that they're having at U of M this year, like, so that 16 or 12 team Canada West tournament.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
Are
that's
you
going
going
to
to
be
be
awesome.
are you involved in that at all? Or, I mean, I'm sure you'll be getting some of the games, I'm sure, but
Yeah, I've been selected as one of, I think there's probably going to be about a dozen officials that'll be a part of that
nice.
a tournament that starts on a Wednesday and ends on Sunday. And yeah, it's going to be really exciting. Over the years, the change, the format of playoffs in Canada West has changed. Where they used to have over several weeks, and you win and you go from quarterfinals, semifinals to the final four. Now it's like you win, you keep playing, you lose, you go home. And University of Manitoba did a great job last year in the playoffs when the Bisons were and we had a hometown playoff match with the UOW U of M, and it was an amazing game, and the gym was absolutely packed to the rafters. So if that's any indication that the community will support it, those 5 days here in March, sorry, yeah, in March, is going to be it'll be rocking here at Investors Group for those playoff action. And Canada West this year, I tell you, anyone can beat anyone. There isn't like a different tiers or anything. Everybody's playing well. Everyone's closely matched. So, I'm not here on this podcast to promote coming out and watching great basketball, but you're not going to see anything better in your backyard. So it's a great opportunity to see some really top end talent, and our home teams, the Bisons and the Westmen, will be right in the thick of things.
Absolutely. No, it's exciting. So let's talk more about you, man. You mentioned Rick DeGagne. That's a that I should have took that chance to transition, but I wanted to ask you a few more questions about some of the stuff that was going on. But I always ask, with people on here is, how they got into, basketball, and for you specifically, like, tell me how you got into officiating. Who were some of your mentors? You mentioned Rick, other ones. So, how did that all happen?
Yeah, it was just kind of, it wasn't, there wasn't really anything organized like the WNBA, where there was leagues, and we have clinics now, and we go out and recruit referees or anything. It was none of that was ever in place back when I was in high school. And it was really my junior high teacher, gym teacher, that actually coached me as well. Just said, hey, while you're, I was going to school at Kelowna in the East playing for Ross Red Lake, and gave me an opportunity to go back and just make some part-time money refereeing some junior high games. And another longtime official and administrator, Wes Krimbol, kind of he refereed as well me while I was playing in high school, and knew that I refereed, and he kind of recruited me, I guess, and said, you should be refereeing some high school next year when you graduate. And that's just kind of how it fell into place. I started doing some high school and had some success, and then you start looking around and seeing guys like Rick DeGagne traveling across the country, and being selected to be one of the officials in the Sydney Olympics in 2000. So you kind of look around, you see some of those success, and go, geez, I'd love those opportunities. And as a young guy, I just kind of stuck with it, and had some really good mentors like Rod Pepler and I said Wes Krimble. They kind of took a liking to the some of the things that I was doing, and you know, so it just kind of evolved. It wasn't one of those kind of things I had on the dartboard or whatever on my to-do list or a goal to become an official, you know, and just became a part of it. And you know, part of the fraternity, and a lot of my closest friends came out of the basketball community, you know, out of the refereeing community. And you know, so high school, and then in my, I guess it was probably when I was 21 when I actually did my very, very first university game.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it was an exhibition game back in the day when University of Winnipeg, the Westman Lady Westman, had a that streak going. They were 88 in a
Yes,
row, and
yes,
they were
yes,
a
yes.
dominant team. I had an opportunity to do a game back way back when with another legend in the name of Ken Epp, and it was an exhibition game actually out in Kenora, Ontario, to be
No way.
all places. So Ken and I loaded up the van and we drove out there. So it was a big thrill for me, not only being a young guy and the opportunity to do the kind of the next level, but just to do it with a guy that refereed me as I, you know, when I played. But at the time, Ken was probably considered not just one of our Manitoba elite officials, but one of the top elite officials in Canada at that time. And just a real book of knowledge, and just a really, really nice man, and willing to, you know, provide his experiences and knowledge. So you know, I remember that night like it was yesterday. That was really the start of when I kind of got the bug or the interest in going, yeah, I can do this and I want to do this. So that's many, many years ago. And that's just kind of really, that's that was really, you know, the start of it for my next, I guess, the next chapter at the you know, the post high school level.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. No, that's a good little lead in, but I got to take you back, man. I forgot about this because when I was interviewing Ross, he mentioned you. Because and I don't know if I ever brought that up with you, but I said, well, if I'm when I interview Reed, I got to bring it up. So like you obviously played basketball in high school. Tell us a little bit about your playing days with regards to what you remember about having Ross as a coach and just maybe those last, you know, years in high school. Give
So,
a little sneak peek.
for sure, you know, basketball was a real passion of mine, and I absolutely loved playing for Ross, an amazing coach. Still consider him one of my most influential basketball people that I could mention. He would be in the top two or three for sure. So it was a great experience playing for him. I didn't get a whole lot of playing time in my first year in grade 11 with him. But he did a great job of kind of mentoring me through that, and telling me, you know, if you want to play, you gotta earn it, and you gotta work hard, and yeah, you know. So he gave me the kind of, here's the carrot, go chase it. You know, and I had a bit of a growth spurt between grade 11 and 12, and I it was interesting. Ross was also my neighbor. He lived
Oh,
kind of around the corner from me, and I had a hoop on my driveway. And he would see me out there. I would be hours every day practicing, not just shooting, but you know, ball handling, all that kind of stuff. And there'd be times that his son would come over and drop off and stop and say, hey, my dad just wanted to tell you that you know, work on your right hand. I was left-handed at that time, so make sure you're practicing your left hand. So, you know, you'd have his son come over and give me some pointers. So no, he really inspired me to just to work hard and to improve my game. And you know, certainly grade 12 was a great opportunity to play for him, and you know, had lots of playing time there, and made the graduating All-Star game. And you know, I had a great, you know, an amazing experience. But knew there was no real aspiration. You know, the scholarship opportunities weren't coming in the mail, or whatever, back in the olden days when you'd open up your mail. What I heard, anyways, I wasn't getting those opportunities, and you know, kind of just segued, you know, into taking refereeing a little bit more serious. So,
For sure, for
but I
sure.
appreciate you asking me about that, because it, you know, that was kind of a pillar in my youth. That you know, playing for Ross was a real, you know, a treasured time that I look back on as something that was very special. And yeah.
Well, for sure. Ross is a legend, man. It's you say some of the things like he would be, just in my interactions with him. If I could have ever had him as a coach, like knowing what I know about him, I would have said absolutely any day, right? Like he's a special man for sure. But for anyone, so we have a lot of coaches, obviously, who listen to this podcast, right? You, as you can imagine. So you hear that? Graduating all-star, he played. So none of this stuff like, hey, he didn't play all this crap like that just because you play senior men's all that, whatever. I'm saying that, I'm speaking for you. I know you would never say that, Reed. So I'm speaking on your behalf. Okay. No, and it's cool though, because like a lot of people don't like, they just think, well, I don't know. This guy's just like a, he's an official. He doesn't like basketball. He doesn't love the game, right? And a lot of people think that unless you were a guy who they know you from playing college or something like that, they just think, ah, these guys don't know the game, right? And so it's, I think it's an important thing to highlight is like, you had a passion for the game, right? And you were being coached by, one of the best, when it comes to like everything you said about Ross and what I said about him, right? So it's an important piece, I think, to just acknowledge.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously after 21, you said there you had that random game in Kenora with one of the best teams of all time. You got the itch a little bit after that, or that was like the first step. Can you talk a little bit more about the pathway and kind of what took place after that? And then again, maybe looking, I mean, you mentioned a few people. What did it look like for you to kind of get into, I guess it was CIA or UCIAU at the time, whatever it was, college basketball? And then who were some of your mentors again? Because maybe like, I think this is important for again the coaches out there and or anyone who's looking to get into officiating. I know it's very different now, but how does one develop as an official, and how did, and maybe tell your story, and then we can kind of get into the other stuff later. So how did you develop the process, some of your mentors as well, how did they guide you kind of to getting into it full time?
It's it's a great question because what that looks like today compared to 30 years ago is completely different. And I mean, the game and technology and access to information and everything obviously is in today's world is prevalent in the refereeing world as well.
For
You know,
sure.
back then when you're starting out, your bubble is basically as far as your reach, and for me, that's really was Manitoba. So, back in my early 20s, when I'm trying to break in, I guess at the university level, we had a really veteran crew here of some tremendous referees and basketball people. So, it was difficult to break in, but on the other hand, it was great to be. It's like being on a rookie on a veteran team, and the learnings you can get from these people. And you had a guy like Rod Pepler, who was kind of a he's what he's done for the basketball community, and specifically refereeing over the last 40 years. There hasn't been anyone like him, or probably never will be anyone. The time and the commitment and investment that Rod made. So, and it wasn't just at the university level, it was right down to the grassroots for many, many years. So at that time he was the assigner of university at that time. And you got guys like Dave Morphy and Wes Krimble, Larry Hayes, these guys who have been around for a long time. Of course, Rick DeGagne out of Brandon. So you have these kind of veteran presence that are kind of, Bruce Fricker is a name that some of the viewers might know. He moved away about 25 years ago. But and Ken App, again, another guy I talk. So you're talking to all these guys are all in kind of the same age category, and 20 plus years of officiating at that level. So it's great opportunity to watch and learn from them and kind of develop under the watchful eye of Rod Pepler. And when I broke in, I also broke in about the same time as Cam Moskal, as lots of people would know in this community. And Cam and I are about the same age, and he was young as like myself, and got quite involved in refereeing and went along to get his FIBA card as well. So we kind of came up as the young guns moving through the system. And as time went along, there's those opportunities where you're not just refereeing at the U Sport or university level, but the Canada Games, you know, the Western Canada Games, all those summer tournaments start coming along. And then that's really when, for us back then, like it's like seeing a whole new world. You know, as I alluded to earlier, I mean, today, I mean, you just turn on your computer or you're connected everywhere. You know what's going on in basketball around the world, never mind in the next province over. Well, 30 plus years ago, you didn't, you know, until you got a chance to travel outside the, you know, the province, you didn't really, weren't connected with any other officials or, you know what basketball was like in Nova Scotia or British Columbia or Quebec, Ontario, for where you have it. So, you know, I think one of my biggest first tournaments was 1996 was the Canada Summer Games. It just happened to be in Brandon, Manitoba. I was fortunate enough to earn the gold medal game in that tournament. And that was really my biggest, you know, next level opportunity. And, you know, I shone there and, you know, obviously got a gold, made the gold medal game. And then that's when your name starts getting recognized outside the, you know, the province. And, you know, and then other opportunities start lending themselves. And, you know, back then, our national refereeing body was called CABLE, Canadian Association of Basketball Officials. They started running a national referees camp, you know, and that's kind of where you went if you wanted to be seen on the national scene. So, you know, the first couple of years when that started, I attended that that clinic, and that's really where I guess, you know, the next chapter comes from is getting to know my name, not only with these, you know, the Canada Games kind of opportunities, but, you know, going to these camps and seeing, and then of course there's decisions being made about who's going to be our next international official, representing Canada. And so that's where my opportunities came out, from that point to earn my FIBA card. And, you know, something that at that point, I had aspired to for a number of years to work towards that, knowing that there was that opportunity and then I needed to keep working. So started going to camps like this, this Canadian camp. I went down south to a number of, American camps, you know, just to learn and expand my, my knowledge and, you know, just my reps. You know, it's no different as you, Darcy, being a shooter. You're not going to improve until you have these reps, right? And it's no different being on the floor when blowing your whistle and those, you know, when there's a big crash in the paint, is that a block? Is that a charge? You know, you got to have those reps to really understand and make that split second decision. So, you know, so that's kind of the path that I took to move through and kind of move up in terms of on a local perspective here at the university level. And then kind of climb the ladder at the national level.
So when you're doing all that, like when when we go back to when you were 21 there, at that point, obviously you had already been doing high school for quite a little, like it had to have been at least 2, 3, 4 years by then.
Yeah. It's basically, I think in my third year of high school, I started refereeing high school basketball in KPAC, KCAC, I guess back then. So, River East Transcona School Division is where I, you know, I went to school at Kelowna East. And so I started refereeing right away. I was, you know, there was times I was refereeing kids that I played against the year before. It was crazy. I did two full seasons of that. In my second season of high school, I also joined the senior men's rank. So again, another crazy opportunity. Here I am, a 20-year-old punk, just wet behind the ears, just learning to referee, and I'm refereeing 25 and 30-year-old men. You know, they're even 40-year-old men.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
You know, I was refereeing, you know, at that young guys like Ken Opalko, who are still playing. You know, the year before he was coaching MBCI, I was playing. He's coaching, playing again. And now I'm refereeing him as he's chucking threes, you know, on the court. So, I mean, I really jumped in the fast lane without probably being ready for the fast lane. And, you know, I was able to keep myself above water. And, you know, maybe some of the coaches out there that remember me back then might not agree with that. But, you know, it's thrown right to the wolves or thrown right to the fire to learn as you go. And that was, you know, those, you know, like, again, getting back to some of my mentors, when I talk about guys like Wes Krimble and Rod Pepler, just giving me those opportunities to get involved that young. I'm not sure you and I'd be having this conversation, might be a lot different today if you know, those guys didn't do those kind of things for me back when I was you know, 20, 21, 22.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you mentioned the FIBA carding. So what does that actually look, what did it look like for you? I mean, we don't have to talk about what it looks like now, but you know, you're going to all these camps. Is it just all of a sudden you get the call like, hey, Reed, you know what? You know, you've been selected. And then once that happens, was there something else you had to do to prove it? Or tell me about that.
Yeah, it's so interesting. A little bit about what you said, but it's actually a trial. So, you know, there's a fitness component to it. There's a written component to it. And there's an evaluation process of it. So what had happened is you'd go away for a weekend where there's a tournament somewhere in Canada. So I think, geez, I got to remember, I think it was Montreal my first time I went. There was at that time the head of FIBA internationally or in the world, Lubaz was his name, came to Canada to give a clinic. So we sat in classrooms basically Friday, Saturday, Sunday, learning and you know, talking and breakout sessions and all. And a part of that, we'd have to write a written test, and we'd have to pass that. Another component of that, we had to do the beep test, you know, so the old beep test there. And at that time, I think I had to get to 85 beeps, which,
okay, you know what level, you know, that is?
I think it's over, just over 10 minutes now, I think 10 and a half minutes.
Okay.
Something like that. And I still have it on a recording on my phone, and I'm proud to say that I go to the YMCA occasionally, and I get that beeping going on my earbuds, and I still run it. I still try to,
no way,
to make sure that I hit that 85. I want to make sure that you know, I want to stay fit, and
yeah, for
you know,
sure.
So I'm still doing that. So anyway, so you had to pass the physical, and then there's a game component of it. So you know, you're amongst probably 25 officials there that are 24 or 26, something like that. And we'd all go out and referee some games. And at that point, depending on how many FIBA licenses they had at that time, you'd go away from that weekend, you know, kind of feeling however you were, all the mixed emotions. Oh, I did well or didn't do well. And at some point in the next month or so, there would be a letter or there wouldn't be a letter. And if a letter came, it's because you were awarded a FIBA license. If the letter didn't come, you didn't get your FIBA license. So that's kind of how it worked. And today, there's still kind of that, you know, it's I won't say much different, but it, you know, the foundation of it is pretty much the same on how you get a FIBA license in Canada now today. So that was an exciting time. Nerve wracking as heck. You know, you're going in and, you know, I knew everybody that was trying out. Lots of them at that point were kind of my age, and you know, referees from across Canada that we've gone to tournaments together, and we've forged really good friendships. And you know, but you're competing against them. You know, there's only so many jobs you can they're handing out, right? And you're competing against your, not just your fellow officials, but you know, some of your best friends in the basketball community. So. You know, and then you'd have to make sure you pass that fitness test. And so it was nerve wracking. And then, of course, they throw you out and say, okay, well, check the mail every day. And I, you know, every day I was out there waiting for that envelope to come. And thankfully for me, I remember that day when I was awarded the license, and really exciting, and, you know, gave me an opportunity to, you know, travel the world and some of the, you know, some great tournaments. You know, I had an opportunity to travel to places I probably would have never gone. And, you know, I aspired to get to the Olympics. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. But, you know, I wouldn't trade a minute of my time being an official at the FIBA level, and some of the places and players that I got to referee was it was truly, a dream come true, if I may.
Yeah. Well, you never got the college recruitment letter, but you got this one.
Yeah, there you go. This has been on my bucket list, Darcy. So thank you for making that call to be on your podcast.
No, absolutely. Well, when I was speaking about this, the letter you are not
Oh, the
not
letter.
this
Oh,
guy,
yes.
the letter,
Yes, the letter. Yeah,
but
the
this
letter
one
was
as
great. I
well. I
still have
appreciate you
that. Yeah.
saying that. No, but you
Yeah.
got the, like you made it, and you sent that, hey, we want you, right? That's big time. So interesting here. You may or may not know, like obviously I did some work with FIBA myself with 3x3, and so I know it's Lou Bo, I believe is what he goes by. You said Lou Bo, I'm not sure. So I know him. I've spent days and hours talking with the man about officiating in basketball, and he actually came back and was just as an advisor with FIBA 3x3 back in, I guess it was 2018, and so he would be on the sidelines, doing some of the technical directing and just hanging out and observing. And I got to know him quite well, and so we talked quite a bit about stuff. He's a very interesting man, a lot of experience, a lot of stories. So it was pretty cool. But anyways, I only bring that up just to show, because every time this type of stuff happens, I'm reminded of how small the basketball world is in the whole world. Because you're typically like, even doesn't matter who it is, you're like almost just one person away from them, literally, like anybody. I know that person, you know that person. Oh, we both know that person. And it's if you just say, okay, official. So for you, if I go meet, Lubo, and I say, okay, I'm from Winnipeg or I'm from Canada, and then I start naming the officials that I know, you being, you'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, I know him, right? Like eventually you're gonna get to people that you know from one person away. So very, very I've had that moment happen plenty of times in person, which is it's you're always reminded about that. But I
We
wanted to ask you
just,
about, oh, go ahead.
no, I was just going to say, earlier in the podcast here, we were talking about how small the community is here in Manitoba. But, you make a great point. The way basketball is today, it's actually a close-knit or well-connected
It
worldwide,
really is.
and you just gave a great example of that.
It really is. It's quite astonishing. Like I've met people in Tokyo and just wherever, and it's just like what, literally one person away. If you say the country you're from, oh yeah, like because then they know those people. It's just it's interesting. But I want to kind of hear some of these stories. So tell me what was the first tournament that you did once you got your card? Do you
I went
remember?
to a tournament. It was the U16 European Championship
Okay.
in Lithuania.
Nice.
Again, I got an opportunity to travel the world. I don't know if I'll ever make it to Lithuania or where on a personal perspective. What an amazing experience. I was there for 2 weeks. The Baltic Sea was an hour and a half away from some of the beaches there are just some of the most beautiful beaches I've seen in my life. But again, I would have never had that opportunity to go there. So it was a European Championship. It was my first, I guess, real forte into the FIBA world, and I was the only Canadian there.
No way.
And and still some of the guys at the Serbian referees I still am connected with today. And
No
that's
way.
many years ago, and yeah, I was, so I'm basically I'm a Canadian refereeing Canadian basketball. I go to a completely different country, and to be honest, a completely way or different way of how they play basketball. European basketball, as or is especially back then was not your typical Shaquille O'Neal on the low block and pounded into the paint, into the paint. You have athletes that play five positions and they all just are interactive and everyone dribbles, everyone shoots, everyone passes. That is just a different game. So here I am, my first tournament, and I'm mixed in with all European officials refereeing an all European tournament. Absolutely. After 2 weeks, entrenched in that, definitely, coming home, going, again, I took another step in terms of my development. So it was a fantastic opportunity. Really, I look back at that as, one of those, really stepping stones on, becoming, a better official. And I learned so much at that tournament. I became kind of a not only a referee, but I came. I forget the name of the I guess the referee coach or the assigner or the guy running the tournament didn't speak a very good English at all, and we had some disciplinary kind of issues that we had to deal with, and needed the referee's perspective in a written statement. So I became the I guess the consultant, the English consultant on writing these FIBA submissions on what happened in these games. So, so that became quite interesting. So, we'd have two or three people trying to put together, what happened in the game and broken English, and then I had to kind of put it together and put it on paper and write it down, and so we could submit something. So, another experience that I've yet to have or wouldn't have had unless so yeah. So really cool, very, very neat tournament to be at, and a great experience for me at that point.
For sure. that's funny. I've had some experiences like that. I was going to ask you, kind of lost my train of thought, to be honest with you. Oh yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. What is the country that you, so like, you mentioned you've traveled all over, maybe just in your officiating specifically, top country that you visited that you enjoyed for whatever reason?
I think I went to Europe a few times, and it's just a I think like I was at the World University Game in Russia. And just kind of living in that kind of a country for 2.5 weeks, it was really impactful for me. So it was a really neat experience. Down in Mexico at the Pan Am Games in Guadalajara, back the Pan Am Games were there. It was another really cool experience. So just in a large a large city in Mexico, and just seeing how people lived down there and how things were out operated, and the security level that we were, the detail that we had to kind of live under. So I would say those probably Russia and Mexico were those two kind of opportunities that were really, not just from the basketball, but certainly just being kind of engaged in the community and those in those cities and those countries was very cool from a personal perspective.
That's cool. Yeah, no, that's definitely cool. I've been a part of this before in the Philippines. We did the 3x3 World Cup, but we would have like police escorts. Do they have that where they like bring you to the game? Yeah, they like clear people out of
Yeah,
the
the game in
way.
South America. Forget where the game was at this point, but FIBA has a league down in South America, and what they do is it's refereed primarily by the officials down in that area, but they would fly us Canadians in there for to give us some experience and be a part of it, and so that was really cool. I'd leave on a Thursday and I'd ref a Friday night and a Saturday, and I'd fly back to Canada. So I was down there for one of those tournaments. It's probably 8 to 10,000 seat arena, refereeing with two South American officials. They only speak Spanish, and I, some broken English. Nice guys, did a great job. It was the third game of a three-game series, and the home team had a shot at the buzzer to win it, and the big guy went to the floor, and there was no foul, and they lost in a three-game series, and 8,000 people descended on the court, and we had 10 guys with machine guns around us pushing us through that crowd, and
Hold on. They were on the court, like they just rushed the.
It was like the
But like out of anger, because
oh
they
yeah
didn't win.
the home team lost, and the big star had a jumper, a 10-foot jumper to win the game, and he went to the floor, and no foul was called, and the crowd was on the floor, and so now to your point, when you get these guys with machine guns, you get military personnel that are escorting us through the crowd,
That's
You know,
crazy. Wow.
now we go into a change room and you
Yeah.
can hear the crowd was just, you know, there, you know, lots of emotion. And, you know, we're standing in this change room for probably 45 minutes or an hour. And, you know, I'm with my two colleagues who are now the whole time speaking to them, each other in Spanish. And I'm standing there. I have no idea. Are they talking about me or are they talking about the game or whatever? Right. So, you know, yeah, it was crazy, you know, but, you know, that, I mean, that's, you know, when I tell you that story, it, you know, probably, you know, the people that will listen to this boss kind of go, wow, that's kind of neat. Well, that's kind of what, it would be a regular thing in a, you know, in a game down south in Puerto Rico or something, or that game was in Puerto Rico, you know, maybe not to that extent, but just that the emotion with those fans that, you know, we've seen it, you know, I'm sure we've all seen it on TV with the soccer officials, or sorry, soccer fans, you know, it's the same thing in the basketball community. And just that level of emotion and, you know, that's not something we typically see down at the Duckworth Center or a University of Winnipeg after a, you know, a game or that kind of stuff. So yeah, another real cool experience for me as
Yeah,
a FIBA official.
to say the least. So obviously I got to ask you about the, you know, we mentioned in the intro, so I got to actually we actually have to talk about it, but you got to do well, first of all, you got to officiate at Madison Square Garden, which is like it's Madison Square Garden. So as far as North American basketball goes, that's like you know, one of the places that anyone in basketball would want to be in. I mean, just anything, any performer, if you're in Madison Square Garden doing an official event, that's a big deal. So you're able to do that. And then obviously, as I mentioned, you're able to, you know, do Team USA as well. So that must have been a pretty big moment for you. What tournament was that for?
It was a it was a kind of an exhibition warm up to I think it was the World Championships. You know, so they had Puerto Rico, China, and France were the four team, and then Team USA. So it was a four team tournament in Madison Square Gardens, and you know, so you know, I got the call and the opportunity. Don Klein, the former president of our Canadian Association. Don was one of the instrumental in helping me get my FIBA card. Phoned me and asked me if I'd like to, you know, head down to, you know, New York and referee in Madison Square Garden. So I said yes without even looking at my calendar. Of course, I mean that's a highlight of my career. I mean, as you said, it's the
Yeah.
most iconic arena in the world. In you know, you say it, Madison Square Gardens. There isn't many. Yeah, that's as famous of a kind of a stadium that there is in the world, and to be have just the opportunity to be in that building was absolutely amazing. So it's yeah, it was a great experience. You know, 22,000 fans. You know, you go in there and the change room, we're walking out, and Magic Johnson says hello to us as we're walking down the hallway. I mean, like, why wouldn't Magic Johnson be right standing right there, right? You know, it's just. Just, you know, we walk on the floor, and at that time, Coach K from Duke was the head coach of Team USA to Team USA, and he says hello to all three of us officials walking onto the floor, and he says, "Hey, Reed, or hi, Reed, how you doing? How was your flight from Winnipeg?"
Oh, so
So
he does.
here's,
He's got the research, though,
oh,
right?
somebody has gone and done the
Yeah,
research
he's got
with
his little, like, he's
those
like
that I'm from Winnipeg,
a
and but I mean. I mean,
still.
that's never happened to me before, right? Here's got the one of the most iconic basketball figures in the United States saying hello to me and how's my flight, you know? And that, I mean, that's just a level of, I won't say professionalism, but just the detail and the importance they put on just, you know, checking all the boxes and, you know, so walking out there and Coach K saying hello to us. And yeah, that was kind of neat, but it was like, wow. You know, just it just blew me away at that point. I wasn't expecting that. So yeah, I mean the game, I mean it wasn't I wouldn't say the most challenging game just because, you know, especially back then, Team USA was always so much better than everyone else. But you know, it was an opportunity to referee Steph Curry, you know, in his kind of beginning of his career. I mean, certainly maybe not the player we know who Steph Curry is today, but guys like Kevin Durant, and so it was just it's a dream come true. I remember making a call, and at that time, if you know a referee and you make a call, you go opposite the team bench area where the scorer's table is. So I'm standing as they're shooting foul shots, and I hear a guy just beaking off at me, just giving it to me, So I just kind of turn around, and it's Spike Lee. And it's like, and it's well, and Spike Lee is well known for being front row at all the Knicks games, and those were his seats.
Yeah.
And he's well known for always showing up late. And so when the game started, there's absolutely no way Spike Lee was sitting there, but this is in the second quarter or something. And all of a sudden I turn around and I'm getting my chewed out by Spike Lee. It's again, another real neat experience that I was able to have there at Madison Square Gardens.
Yeah, it's almost when you talk about it, it's almost like a surreal experience, right? What's going on? But it's the one thing is interesting, and I'm curious what your opinion on this or what your experience was like when you're in. Obviously, we know these people from TV, right? Whether it be Magic Johnson or Spike Lee, for that matter. But when you're in person with them, obviously you get the sense like, obviously we know this, but like, okay, they're just normal people who have done some great things. But did you feel any less did you feel that they were more humanized, or were you still like, oh wow, it's Magic Johnson? Like, were you still like, oh, look at that? What was your perspective? Because you still have a job to do, right? You can't be sitting there being like starstruck. You got to be focused, and you're there as well. Like, you're, if they're there for whatever reason they're there, you're there for the reason you're there, and there's a certain level of professionalism that you got to maintain going into there. So what was your kind of I guess mood or mindset kind of working through that?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it was kind of an exhibition series is one thing, but valid point there. I mean, these people are larger than life, as we know, as movie stars, as Spike Lee or whatever, or Magic Johnson. To me, at that point, I mean, I grew up as a kid in the 80s. And Showtime, Magic Johnson was, on TV all the time. I mean, I loved the Lakers and the way they played, and, certainly was one of the reasons why I love basketball as much as I did. And I walk out of the change room and he's standing right there. I mean, 6'9" as it is, never mind larger in life of a human being as he is. It was, it's wow. Yeah, it was Magic Johnson, So, I'm not going to get kind of get corny on here, but once the lights are on and your whistle blows and you get focused in the game, that kind of stuff subsides, and you get focused on between the lines what's taking place there, and
absolutely.
Kevin Durant becomes a number, not a an NBA all-star kind of thing, and you just got to treat it that way. So you soak in and enjoy the moment before the actual game, and after you get back into that, reflecting on it and the memories that you've made. But certainly when that ball gets thrown up and you start the game, it's it's all business from there on in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. No, that's super cool, super cool. So I wanted to transition a little bit here, because obviously we can go on for a long time if we really wanted to. I could ask you a million questions, and I still have a bunch more to ask you, but I wanted to talk about the WNBA, all right, Winnipeg Minor Basketball Association. So obviously, I was grateful for my time there as the executive director, and, we got to actually connect, I guess, off the court during my time there. But you've been around, and I got to yes, exactly, the founder, Mike Gruda, and so we got the backstory of the WNBA and everything like that, and how it all came together. But just how did you get involved specifically? Because at the time, again, I'm not even sure, this was what, 90? Was this like 96?
Yeah, it's going to be. I think that's about that number. And I'm glad you asked the question, Darcy, because to me, I think it's a fantastic story. It's Mike Gruda coming back to Winnipeg. I mean, as the story goes, he had a couple of kids and nowhere really for them to play. And back, moving from Calgary to Winnipeg, they had a community club types league out there where his kids had somewhere to play. So, first thing Mike does is he figures out, well, I better talk to Basketball Manitoba and let's get a league going or whatever. And which they did. They got 40 teams and a league. And I at that time was going to start sometime in the fall. And this particular Saturday, the league was going to start. And the Wednesday prior to that, so a big 3 days before the league started, it was after 8 o'clock p.m. And it's important I tell you that because it's a Wednesday before the Saturday. The phone rings, and it's Mike Ruta saying, "Hey, Reed, my name's Mike Ruta. I started this league, and your name was given to me as someone that maybe could help out getting the referees." And right away, I'm like, "Yeah, sure, let's do it." And you know, when does the league start? Saturday morning, you know, I, you know, we have 40 teams. We got 20 games on Saturday, and I have at that point, there's no infrastructure put in place in terms of, you know, young officials around the city or, you know, at that time, the middle school or junior high leagues. We didn't have like a structure of a list of officials or anything, so I had to scramble for 48 hours to try to get, enough referees on the floor to start this league. And certainly I was able to do that. And so that was really the beginning. It was a phone call from Mike Gruda. You know, I alluded to a name there, Rod Pepler, the kind of the godfather of refereeing in Manitoba. He recommended my name. And that's really where it started. And it's quickly realized that we needed to catch up to the game at that point in terms of developing referees and providing some structure. And, so Rod and myself worked on developing a training protocol for officials and a recruitment process. And, you know, and that's kind of evolved over the last 26 or 27 years. So, again, very grateful for that opportunity from Rod to pass my ling long and just be a part of grassroots basketball in Manitoba, you know. And it's if you were to told me that night I was going to be finding, you know, referees on a Saturday afternoon in 1996 and fast forward to 2024 and I'm still here kind of doing the same thing, I'd tell you you're crazy. So, it's been an amazing experience and tremendous league. Happy to, you know, talk about over the years of putting that infrastructure in place and the training of officials and watching them evolve through, you know, doing 7, 8-year-old kids to virtually half our U Sport panel or whatever our local board here is made up of officials who actually started in the WNBA. And if you look at our senior officials in Manitoba right now, we're at about 230 officials in Manitoba and probably 180 of those in the city of Winnipeg. You know, I'd hazard a guess that half of them or more first games they ever refereed were in the WNBA. So, you know, you look at, and I'm sure you've had those conversations with, the powers to be and the fact that you've been involved in the WNBA and basketball for many years. The development of players and going through that and what it's meant to the
Big
game,
time, big
it's
time.
been just as important, maybe even more important for the basketball community to have a grassroots level where we can get kids that are 14, 15 years old, get them involved in the game, train them, provide some mentorship to them, you know, and kind of start growing their roots so they stay with the game and we can evolve them into the high school ranks and then the senior ranks and you know, for some of them move along into the, you know, U Sport level. And you asked me the question how I got involved. And, you know, that was many years ago with that phone call with Mike Gruda and how and where we've evolved to today has just been outstanding. And still it's truly one of my passions or one of the things that I'm proud of the most, to be honest with you, is my relationship with the WNBA and what it means to the officiating community for Manitoba.
It's well said. That's very well said. And you're right. I've interviewed a whole bunch of people, whether it was be coaches even, who got their coach their start in the WNBA, players, people who started as players and then transitioned to coaches, and then now they're coaching at, you know, higher levels, provincial teams and stuff like that. Some of our most elite players, their first first shot at it was in the WNBA. So it's very cool. Like the league itself, been so critical in just developing basketball in the province, right? And you said it very, very well. I think there was it last year, or is it 25th year, or is it this 2024? I'm not quite sure, but I think it was last year, right?
I think we just hit our 27th year.
27th, so 2 years ago. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I know there was a little bit of stuff done there, but I just know that, like, the league, being in part of it myself, but all the people, I didn't really know until, you know, I did interview Mike Ruda and I did a bit of research, and I actually asked him, I said, and this is similar because you were right there with him on officials, so I'll ask you this question. It's like, and I mean, you kind of stated it, but I said, the question I asked him directly was, you know, how does it feel to know that, like, you've impacted people who, you know, thousands of people that you have you've not met even half of them, but you've impacted their basketball experience or their you know, they're experiencing with basketball and maybe even made it happen just by the work you're doing, and how special and impactful that is. Now, I know you know this because you just said it, but he was kind of like, yeah, you know what, like, it's when you think about it, it takes people to step up and be champions, right? And so league itself,
Mike has been recognized many times, and he deserves every recognition that he ever has, is in the foundation that he put together with this WNBA. But I can tell you from a personal perspective, having the opportunity to work with Mike Gruda was, you couldn't have asked for a better human who started the league, and the support he gave me as a young guy trying to support the league with officials, and his support in protecting young officials, and how important that was to him. And, not just having a league so kids can play, but having a league that referees can referee and feel safe and be protected and, be a part of something very special was always, and still is today. I still talk to Mike. And in fact, this year he came back and he is doing a little bit of refereeing in the WNBA.
No way. Just
because he wants to be a part of it. Yeah, 100%.
Oh, look at that. You know, he's full circle.
He just resurfaced and he's come back, and he just wants to be a part of it. And it's just so important to him, it just speaks to the individual he is, and, how lucky we are in this community to have a guy like what he's done for the game through
absolutely.
The WNBA.
Absolutely. No. It's great. No, it is absolutely great to have the league is, I would say it's kind of like the foundation of basketball, you know, it's like the bottom level, and just it's strong. And that's why the rest of the stuff is above it is so strong, right? Like everything that you've mentioned from on the official side of things is, you've been able to establish some of those pathways through the WNBA. So it's just, it's a great league. And I'm obviously super grateful that I was able to be a part of it. So we're getting close to the end here. I typically line up a few questions. Now, these ones here, if you don't have an answer to them, you can just say a pass, or you can just answer something completely different, but they're just more direct questions, just about your experience. And I know sometimes it's hard to just recall these things off the top of your head, but I always like to ask these questions at the end. So if I was to ask you, Reed, what's your most memorable basketball moment? What are some of the moments or a moment that comes to mind?
Walking out on the floor, Madison Square Gardens, the referee.
That was it,
22,000 fans refereeing Team USA.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty straightforward. Hold on. I just had a memory flash into my mind.
Yeah.
So Adam Wedlake shared something with me, and I don't know if it was during that tournament, but something happened with you. I'm sorry to bring this up, but I want to say, was it a blooper or like you made something happened? And in the game that was like significant. I don't remember if I'm just making this up, but does this ring a bell at all?
Oh, geez. That's
because the game was on TV, and I remember, I don't know if you blundered a call or something. There was a mix up. It was something happened. I don't think, I don't know if I'm making this up, but does this ring a bell at all?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you, I called a back over center.
Okay.
I forget the name. He was kind of the sixth or seventh man on Golden State that just retired.
Iguodala? Yeah.
And he's 6'8" and a tremendous athlete.
Yes.
And he, I'm standing there And he went and got a ball and grabbed it and threw it in the front court. And I called the back over center. And standing right behind me on my shoulder was Coach K. And he says, "Reed, don't let the speed and the athleticism affect the way you call the game." I called it, I missed, like I blew the call, but I've
Oh, it was
never
okay. You
seen,
blew it. Okay.
yeah. So it wasn't back over center. But the fact that he was able to get as far as he did and get that ball and get it back into the front court without committing the violation was, nothing I've ever seen humanly possible. But I mean, you're just talking about the best athletes in the world, and certainly him himself would have been in the top percentile of
Oh,
those athletes.
100%,
And
100%.
that a phenomenal, active athleticism caught me by surprise, and I just,
Wow.
boom,
Coach K said that
So
No way.
it,
Yeah, he's
and he was
then
like,
all this
and I'm
is.
like in my own head going, "Yeah, you're
Yeah,
right,
right.
coach, but I
Yeah.
can't turn around and tell that." So
Man,
yeah,
and
so that
he.
that was kind of a blunder, but kind of a neat experience. And I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Adam and I are gonna have to have a chat about sharing these
Well,
kind of things. So
I was in the inner circle. I'm sorry. You know what? I'm
No.
bringing it public. I apologize.
Yeah.
So you can answer either of these or just whatever comes to mind. So either funniest basketball moment or craziest basketball moment. I think you already talked about the ones with the guns and all that, but is there another funny or crazy moment that stands out?
Well, I think the one that Adam is alluding to was actually when it was a national semifinal on television in Scotia Place in Ottawa.
Okay.
It was Carleton against University of Alberta, the Golden Bears, and it was the semifinal. It's like you said, it was live on TSN, and I was running down as the lead official. I was busting it down the court, and a player from Carleton was going to the hoop, and a player from Saskatchewan, or sorry, from Alberta, stood in there and took the charge. So I blew my whistle and I stepped in it to make the signal. And as I'm going this way, the players are coming the other way. And he took my feet right from underneath me.
No
And
way.
as when I was falling, my elbow fell right on that Alberta's player, right on the side of his head. So the blunder, I guess you say, the right call. I made the right call. It's just the collision happened. We all fall to the floor and we get up. And of course, at that time, all my refereeing colleagues are on along the sidelines and falling out of their chairs, laughing and everything. I give them the big safe signal that, Saturday night, back in that day, they had the plays of the week or the best plays of the week. Well, they had the worst play of the week. The
Oh, see, this
TSN
is
worst player of the
yes.
week was Reid Kenyon, getting his legs taken out of me. And and that
man.
was the blunder. It was funny. And then the next night, I saw the kid from Alberta, and he was all excited, came running over to me, gave me a high five, and he's like, "Hey man, we made TSN's worst play of the day. And you gave me a concussion." So
No
as
way,
I yeah, I actually
the elbow.
I landed right on top of my elbow, right on his temple. So yeah, I so that's somewhere in the archives. I have a couple of good refereeing buddies at times over the years when we've been together, all of a sudden, if there's a TV, that play comes up on
They'll pull
to
it
be
up.
seen that. So yeah,
Nice.
that would definitely take the blunder of my career
There we go.
call. So yeah,
There we go.
very funny.
I'm sure we can find it on YouTube somewhere. So if people want to go search it, you
Absolutely.
can pull it up. Okay. No, Reed, I appreciate your time. I always like to finish with one question, piece of advice. And so, since we're your expertise is officiating. I like to imagine if, to frame the question with, you're speaking and what you've done before, I know this already, but to young officials, and like say a group of young basketball players, right? And these are the people like yourselves. Like you're not going on to college, you're probably gonna play senior men's, but we want you to officiate. We want you to think about doing that. What would be the advice that you would give them, and specifically the advice that you'd give them, because you can sit in there and talk for 30 minutes. That's not gonna People only remember a few things when they interact with somebody, right? So you want them to remember this. What advice would you give them about officiating, getting into officiating, kind of making that part of their life?
Yeah, absolutely. It's and before I kind of answer that question, it's one of the privileges I have in the kind of the leadership roles that I sit in, is I have an opportunity to provide kind of reference checks for a lot of young officials. And I'm proud to do that, because to speak to your question, Darcy, refereeing basketball as a young person, I don't think there is any better part-time job that you can have, because it, whatever area of your life you go in, if you continue officiating or your professional life, the skills that you develop and can be easily transferred into your next chapter of your life. You're in a court where you have to make split-second decisions. You're under pressure. You got to work with a partner and have good communication, and if you develop those kind of skills as you go along and become proficient at those translate into skills that will benefit you in whatever walk of life you do. So, just from a big picture perspective, when I answer that question, just how impactful being a referee can be on your development as a person, is, I've seen it for 30 years, and I wouldn't, it just, I take so much pleasure in seeing some of these people now that, first started back in 25 years ago, 15, 10 years ago, and I see where they are today in their life. And I know that a foundation of who they are or where they are is because of basketball refereeing and the development of those skills of, being able to translate into their working life. But and from a, but dial it down a little bit. I mean, as you said, not all of us are going to have the ability to play at the next level, what that even looks like at the college, university, or even, the pro level. What a tremendous way to be still involved with the game. I mean, I've been involved with this game for 30 years. If I didn't referee, I might be a fan, but that's it. I'm still involved with the game. I'm excited tonight that I'm going to be on a university floor with some of Canada's best athletes, and I'm going to be a part of that action, and I still am. And I some of my best friends in the world are the referees in the game from across Canada and across the world. So the game can deliver so much more to you, from that aspect. We can't have a game if we don't have players, we don't have coaches. And that third pillar of officials. And it's a way to stay involved with the game. And there's so many opportunities for young people today to take it to the next level. So if you want to be, if you're competitive and you want to stay in the game and you want to go to the next level, there's a pathway to get there. Those were that's kind of that's kind of the message I would say to those young officials is, the de personal development for the next chapter in your life. And if you want to stick with the game and take it to the next level, and whatever that next level might be for you, being an official is a great way to get there.
Yeah, I mean it's so interesting listening to you say all that, and I said, well, I mean this is essentially the story of almost coaches, players, or officials in basketball, right? Take you around the world. You're going to meet some of your best friends. It's going to give you confidence. It's going to make you better at decision making. All those things, and it's so interesting because all those, it's everyone plays a different role, but it's all for that game, and the outcomes are very similar, right? Like what you get back from being a part of it. And so from what I hear, and it's if to kind of like summarize what you said, is it's really just an opportunity to stay involved in the game. If you love basketball, you can get some of the same joy that you get from playing, or even coaching through officiating. And that's all I heard from you, is this pure joy. Hey, travel, all these things, and then again tonight you're going to officiate a college basketball game, right? And you're excited for it. And
Oh, yeah.
that's the same thing as someone who's, I'm going to coach my game. I'm excited for it. I'm going to play. I'm excited, right? It's pretty cool.
It's, yeah, I mean, even now with the Sea Bears in town, like
Yes.
that, we have another kind of chapter in the game here locally, and the excitement that that brings, and being involved with that is just, it's outstanding. So, you give me an opportunity, a platform to kind of promote being an official. It's, I recommend anyone that's interested in it to check it out. It's so much fun, and there's good people, and being a part of the game is so much fun. So, it's brought so much joy, and it's become part of who I am. Like, today when I walk around, people know me as my customers in my professional life, know me. Hey, you're that guy, you're a referee. And, that happens all the time, in this community. So yeah, it's, love to see more officials, join the game and be a part of the game.
Well, I'll just ask on that note, because I totally agree with you. We do need officials. So people who may be listening, coaches and stuff like that, just so that people know for sure, what's the best way if someone's interested in getting involved, where should they go? What should they do?
Yeah. So we train officials typically every fall. We have a number of training sessions or clinics that you must attend. And unfortunately, just in the beginning part of the season, so there isn't anything now until probably September or October. But, MABO, our governing body, Manitoba Association of Basketball Officials, if you go to our website, MABOREF.com, or Basketball Manitoba always has information on becoming an official on their website, and they promote it. Or just ask if you're part of the game. Ask an official you see at a game. Hey, how do I become a referee? Today it's with technology and the access to information, it's not hard to find us, or talk to an official you see at a game. I'm sure they'd love to speak to you about it.
No, that's great. That's super good. And I'll add also that if you're a basketball player and you need a part-time job, and you could go work part-time in some store somewhere, or you'd be an official. I mean, it's not that hard of a choice. You get to be around the game. Why? You know what I mean? And the pay is not bad.
Pay's not great. Bad. The working hours are so flexible. You pick your own times when you referee.
100%.
You get some physical workout when you're refereeing, and you get to, and develop those skills, as we say. Yep. Split second decisions, communication, working under pressure, all those things that, In our professional life, those things come up all the time, and we need to be, the better you're at it, the more success you're going to have. So
100%, 100%. Yeah. Well, Reid, I appreciate you taking the time to come on the podcast, and I wish you good luck tonight in the game. And you've been doing it over 30 years. You're looking great. You probably have another 10 or more left in you at this point. You stay in shape like this, man. But no, we do appreciate you coming on.
Oh, it's been great. Great catching up with you personally, Darcy. Certainly, as you said, our paths have crossed many times, and good to see you. And talking basketball is something I love to do, so the time here has flown by, and it's been great. A great connection. I appreciate you having me on your podcast.
Awesome. All right, take care, Reid.
Okay, take care, my friend.
All right. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please like, subscribe, follow, and share this series, and reach out to us with your comments on the show. Thanks again for joining us.